good to be with you tonight. I appreciate Rex singing those songs to help us focus on what our study is about tonight. That last song would be a good lesson in itself. I do want to talk about what we read about in Titus this evening, particularly the part that applies to advice to young men, as Paul was giving to Titus, so that he could, in turn, encourage young men in those ways. We'll be saying more about that in a few minutes. But first of all, I'd like to share with you an article that I found probably several years ago entitled What Little Boys Are Made Of. And the thrust of this article is that in school systems, they say in this article, are biased against the way boys generally behave. That 85% of the students in the emotionally and behaviorally disturbed programs are boys. And it's not that the boys are four times more disturbed than girls, but rather that there's a mismatch of expectations. The thrust of this article is that the schools are more favorable to girls' behavior in general, which is not rowdy like boys. And that's the idea that this article had. And by the guy that wrote it, Gene Edgar, a professor of special education at University of Washington, goes on to say that boys may be prone to more overt acting out behaviors. Not paying attention in class, impulsiveness, and shouting are a few typical boy behaviors that he cites. Girls are less that way, and that's troublesome for schools. Now, it'd be interesting to talk to Beth and some others of you to see, well, is that true, especially as you get older, with the older kids in high school, as they enter adolescence, you know, scientists say the brain goes through this massive this stage of rewiring, preparing children for adult life, where the children go through a special phase to help develop, and they gain muscle control, and the teenagers are developing new decision making and impulse control, emotional control, and this change coincides with physical growth at age 11, usually for girls, and 14 for boys. And this article says the problem comes in that the transitional stages, which can last several years past the growth of the body, late teens for girls and mid-20s for boys. So I thought that was kind of interesting, if you follow all that, that they're saying that schools a lot of times have problems with boys just because of the way boys are wired and the way girls are wired. So does that give an excuse for misbehavior? No, it doesn't excuse bad behavior, but it does explain that maybe the common experience of teenage boys being scatterbrained and emotional roller coasters and the reckless behavior that sometimes come with it. But with that said, what does that mean to us? It means that young people need to practice bringing their impulses under control when they're growing up, and parents need to help them do that. And likewise, those of us that are older need to learn how to keep our impulses under control. And let's look at a few things that the Bible has to say about this. In Titus chapter 2, verses 6 through 8, as we've already read, or Ethan did, Titus 2, verses 6 through 8, likewise, exhort the young men to be sober-minded in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that the one who is an opponent may be ashamed. Now, this shows you that that this really counters this impulsive behavior, that you're supposed, young men are supposed to be under control, and Paul tells Titus that they should be told to be that way, to be sober-minded, to be under control. Well, what does the Bible have to say about youth? The wise writer in Ecclesiastes tells us that youth is a time for rejoicing, time for fun, if you want to put it that way. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these, God will bring you into judgment. That last phrase really says something, doesn't it? If it just said, rejoice in your youth and let your heart cheer you, period. You're just open to define that however you want. Well, whatever I want to do that's going to make me happy in my youth, I'm just going to do that. But the wise writer says, but know for all these things that you do, God's going to bring you into judgment. So enjoy your youth, but be careful, is what Ecclesiastes is telling us. Youth is a time for fun, but you're still responsible for the things that you do. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 10 says, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. So there, along with this idea that youth is joyful, there is also, you know, some things to help temper that in our minds, that we are responsible for what we do. Again, Ecclesiastes 11, verses 7 and 8 tell us that life is something that is meant to be enjoyed. Truly, the light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for there will be many. All that is coming is vanity. And if we skip to the next chapter, chapter 8, verse 15, I commend enjoyment because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry, for this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life which God gives him under the sun. So here, again, we are told by Ecclesiastes that life is something to be enjoyed. And that is something that we want. That is something that we want for our youth, something that we want for ourselves. But it doesn't mean that life is always fun, that everything is going to be fun. There are going to be difficult times. There are going to be times that are sorrowful. That's what this says in Ecclesiastes, that you're going to have joy, you're going to enjoy the pleasantness, but there's also days of darkness. Everything is not always pleasurable. And it's often said that youth is wasted on the young. Well, what do we mean by that? That when you grow older and you have responsibilities, that you look back at the time when you didn't have to worry about those things. I think I've mentioned it many times that our family didn't have a lot of money, but my parents never really let that affect us that much. We didn't know. I knew that we bought shoes at Kmart instead of other places, and there's things that we didn't have that other people had. But in general, we had what we needed. And I didn't have to worry about whether or not my dad had enough money to pay the electric bill. And those are things that kids are sometimes shielded from. And they don't worry about those things. And youth can ignore a lot of these days of darkness that Ecclesiastes talks about, because parents shield them from that kind of thing. I think rightly so. And I think it's a shame sometimes when kids grow up in an environment where they're having to take on the role of the adult and having to worry about those kind of things. But that said, those things can't be ignored forever. There are times for joy and there's time for sadness, and they both have their purpose. And young people need to grow up and realize that. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 1 says, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance. So there is a proper time for fun and serious things. I don't know that we always got it right when I was growing up. Sometimes the kids thought it was time for fun, but Dad didn't think it was that time. And, you know, a lot of times we were corrected on those things. But that said, we need to remember what the wise writer says. There's a time and a place for these things. But how can our attitudes, especially as young people, be misused when it comes to thinking about fun? Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 and 2 says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure, but surely this also is vanity. I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? Ecclesiastes is saying that, you know, just pure silliness is something that's useless. And I know we like to laugh, and there are some times when things get started and you just can't stop laughing, and that's fun. And then we have to calm down. And I could tell you many stories about life at our house around the dinner table when everybody was laughing but my dad. And he'd eventually crack a smile usually and tell us not to bust a gut, is what he usually said. And what would happen is we'd get on a roll about something and my mom would start laughing, and then he would eventually have to laugh too. But he was more the one trying to get us under control. You know, when you meet a person who makes a joke out of everything, isn't that person a lot of fun to be around sometimes? But does it ever get annoying? Does it ever get old? At first, it may be something that is a blast. But as Solomon is saying, I'm going to test you with mirth. Well, he's tested it, and what was his conclusion? Yeah, I got tired of it. I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? You know, I think it's also interesting to note that many comedians, you know, seem to have a lot of problems, that they may have a lot of pain in their life, and that the comedy comes out of the pain. Maybe we'll say more about that in a minute. But the person that makes a joke out of everything, it just gets tiring. It becomes an irritation. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 6, for like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. Isn't that interesting? The crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. It's to say that this is an irritation. In fact, this misuse of mirth is something that God criticized Israel about in Isaiah chapter 22, verses 12 and 13. The prophet says, in that day, the God of hosts called for weeping and mourning, for baldness and girding with sackcloth, but instead joy and gladness, slaying oxen and killing sheep, eating meat and drinking wine. Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. What's being said here? That they did not have the proper place for mirth. That there was a time to be serious, and Israel was just acting like everything's fine, and it wasn't. There was a time to be sad, but they were happy. In fact, I believe what they were doing is what many people do today. They use fun as a distraction. They didn't want sadness. And sometimes people don't want sadness. And, you know, when all the partying stops, what happens? Well, the evil time is still coming for Israel. So, pure laughter and silliness can be okay in its proper place, but it can also, you know, distract you from other things that need to be addressed. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 2 through 4 is very sobering. It tells us better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Isn't that a hard concept sometimes for us to understand? And I'd rather laugh than cry. But we're told that there's a time that it's better to go into the house of mourning. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. Why is that? Well, it brings us back into focus. It brings things back into focus that are important. You know, funerals a lot of times are very sad, but they also cause us to be very introspective about our life, and that can be a help to us. Maybe that's why it's good to be in the house of mourning, because it helps you to focus on things that are necessary, and it brings you face with the idea that we're all mortal, we're all going to die. And while we're laughing it up and having a good time, we're not thinking about that. But it needs to be thought about from time to time. Also, fun can be misused, when it causes harm to someone else. Have you ever done something or said something that you thought would be funny, but the person on the receiving end didn't think it was funny? I've never done that, but I know some people have. No, I've done that before. Hurt people with my words, you know, saying something as a joke, thinking it would be funny, but the person on the receiving end didn't think so. So, young people and us that are older need to remember that. Laughter can cause sorrow. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 13, even in laughter the heart may sorrow, and the end of mirth may be grief. Laughter sometimes causes what you didn't expect and what you didn't intend. James chapter 5, verses 4 through 6, says, indeed the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out, and the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of the Sabbath. You live on earth in pleasure and luxury. You have fattened your hearts as in the day of slaughter. You have condemned, you have murdered the just. He does not resist you. Here it's talking about those that have fun at the expense of others, and it's talking about those that are not thinking about the effect that they're having on others. Specifically, you have lived on the earth in pleasure and luxury while you're taking advantage of others. And so that's more of an extreme example of that. But that's how some people behave. They grow up taking all their fun at the expense of others. And that's how some people think that they're funny. All of their jokes and all of their sarcasm is directed at cutting somebody else down. Well, ha ha, you know, I've made fun of them, I said this, I've made fun of the way that they dress, the way that they look, or what have you. And as long as people keep laughing at it, you know, they keep doing it. But it's at the expense of others, and we need to avoid that. We also need to make sure that we do not focus on fun and ignore danger. You kids, have you ever been playing a video game and suddenly your mom is between you and the TV saying, I do believe that the house would burn down around you and you wouldn't notice? Well, why would she say that? Because she's probably been saying something to you for 10 minutes that you haven't heard until she physically gets between you and the object of your affection. The house would burn down and you wouldn't notice. You know, she's exaggerating. That probably wouldn't happen. But it's still a point. There are people that will focus on fun and ignore any kind of potential danger. Adults and kids alike, they want to do something that's going to distract them from what they really ought to be focusing on. In Amos chapter 6, verses 3 through 6, the prophet really addresses this really well. Woe to you who put far off the day of doom. Does that mean the day of doom is far off? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It means the day of doom is here, and you're just going around and acting like it's not here. Who cause the seed of violence to come near, who lie on beds of ivory, stretch out on your couches, eat lambs from the flock and calves from the midst of the stall, who sing idly to the sound of stringed instruments and invent for yourself musical instruments like David, who drink wine from bowls and anoint yourself with the best ointments, but are not grieved for the affliction of Joseph. There's a problem here. There's danger. Israel is suffering, and you're just going around like nothing's happened. People will try to use pleasure to put off problems and to ignore danger. It's probably the most common reason that we hear people use for using drugs and alcohol is that they want to escape reality. You know what a lot of people do when they've been given their pink slip, when they've been told that they're being laid off from their job? They go out and get drunk.
when something bad happens to them. They want to go get totally wasted in one way or another, whether it be with drugs or alcohol. They've just found out that they've got a problem, some kind of problem that needs to be solved, whether it's work-related, family-related, or whatever. Well, how is that going to fix it? How is that going to repair the situation that they're in? Well, it disconnects you from reality temporarily so that you don't have to think about it anymore. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 29 says, "Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine, those who go in search of the wine." Skipping to verse 33, "Your eyes will see strange things, and your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or one who lies at the top of the mast, saying, 'They have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake that I may seek another drink?'" Doesn't that describe what people see as the benefit of drugs and alcohol? Is that they can escape? They can wake up and not know what's happened to them? But it doesn't solve a single problem. It just makes problems worse. Proverbs 23:32, "At the last it bites like a serpent, and it stings like a viper." Young people, don't focus on fun and ignore the dangers that are around you. Don't get involved in immorality because others entice you to go that way, or because you have problems and you want to escape reality. We do not need to focus on fun with no thought as to what the dangers of that is. This is also described in Proverbs chapter 7, verse 21, talking about the immoral aspect of this. "With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately, he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till an arrow struck his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare. He did not know it would cost his life. Now therefore listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. For she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death." This is describing the enticement of an immoral woman. And she entices, and those that fall victim to her are doomed. Now, when somebody is being enticed in that way, it doesn't seem dangerous. Why? Because somebody is ignoring the danger. They're only seeing the fun. They're only seeing the pleasure. And in so many areas of our life, we need to make sure that our eyes are open and that our minds are savvy to what's going on around us, so that we're not enticed to go in that direction, whether it be drugs, alcohol, or sex, or whatever. You know, there are those that use sin for fun, that enjoy breaking the law. I can remember, I don't think I've ever told Ethan about this. See, the ears are going to perk up now. But I got into a lot of trouble one time with my mom and dad. I just was in the wrong place at the wrong time, in the wrong car at the wrong time. But I had some friends of mine that I rode to school with, to high school. I think I was in ninth grade. And they decided that it was going to be fun to drive around the neighborhood and throw bricks at mailboxes. I wasn't the one involved in it, but I didn't stop it either. And we ended up getting into a lot of trouble for that. Well, I did with my parents, and they, the ones that were doing it, got into more trouble. What could I have done? Well, I could have tried to stop it. I could have tried to tell them that was a real dumb idea. And it's against the law to do that. Now, a bunch of teenage boys may think, well, that's just fun. You know, you go put a cherry bomb in somebody's mailbox, throw bricks at a mailbox or whatever. And that goes back to what we said at the beginning, that when we're teenagers, we're not thinking right. That there's nothing good about that. Proverbs chapter 1 describes those who seem to think that it's fun to break the law. And there's just nothing good about that. Don't go that way. The Proverbs are there for a reason. If you won't listen to your mom and dad, listen to Proverbs. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. Oh, that all sounds good, doesn't it? We're going to lie in wait, and somebody unsuspecting comes by. We're going to take what they have, and we're going to have lots of money to spend on ourselves. What does the wise writer say? My son, don't do that. Do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Stay away from people that will behave in that way. And if you've been in their presence when they behave that way before, make sure that's not who you're going to be around in the future. There are those that think sin, breaking the law, is something fun. That it's a challenge, and it's exciting to break the law, to speed, to run a stop sign, to shoplift, whatever. 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 3 and 4 says, you have spent enough of our past lifetimes in doing the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. Peter is saying that these things should be in the past. And since they're in the past for you, you may have lots of friends who say, well, you're not any fun anymore. Well, so be it. They think it strange you do not run with them. It's kind of strange that people think that the way to have fun is to get totally wasted or stoned out of your mind or whatever the terms are today that I'm not up to date on. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 3 through 5 tells us that fornication, uncleanness, or covetousness, let it not be named among you as is fitting for saints. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, or covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Notice that what is mentioned here among fornication and uncleanness is foolish talking, coarse jesting. So I think you could throw into that category the telling of dirty jokes, things that are inappropriate, repeating jokes that you've heard that are inappropriate. Those are things that don't need to be named among Christians. Now let's go back to where we started at the beginning of this lesson. Titus chapter 2, verses 6 through 8. What was Titus asked to teach young men? First of all, to be sober-minded. What does the word sober mean? Well, it means to have a sound mind, to have a healthy mind, to be moderate, to be self-controlled. The exact opposite of what it means to be sober-minded, I think, could be demonstrated by the demon-possessed man in Mark chapter 5. In verse 2, when he had come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit who had his dwelling among the tombs. Nobody could bind him, not even with chains, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains. The chains had been pulled apart, the shackles broken in pieces. Neither could anyone tame him. And always night and day he was in the mountain and the tombs crying out and cutting himself with stones. Well, maybe that's an extreme example. But that's an example of somebody that's totally out of control, demon-possessed. And we need to be in control. We need to be sober-minded. Mark chapter 5, verse 15 says, "They came to Jesus and the one who had been demon-possessed and had legion sitting and clothed in his right mind." The one that was not sober-minded is now sober-minded because of what Jesus had done. And you know, the same thing can be true for us. The ones that are out of control, with the influence of Christ, we can be in control. We can be sober-minded. It takes preparation. It takes effort. Now, youth is a time of struggle with impulse control. It's far too easy to give in and do the first thing that comes to your mind. And Titus was told to tell the young men to be sober-minded, to be in control. God knew what needed to be addressed with those that are young. This was the time that these young men needed to train themselves to think ahead, to avoid extremes, because dangers lurk. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, "Be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour." 1 Peter 1, 13, "Gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is brought to you by the revelation of Jesus Christ." What does that mean, gird up your mind? Well, it means that you have to prepare. You have to think. Dangers are there, so be on your guard. Also, Titus was told to tell the young men to show yourself as an example of good works. Those that are older have a lot more experience with these kind of things. And young people don't always have a lot of experience with dealing with these temptations that are everywhere.
But they will have to deal with them. Titus chapter 2, 11 and 12. "The grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in the present age." You know, sometimes people will look at kids and say, "Well, you know, kids will be kids. Boys will be boys." How many times have we heard people say that? You've got to let them have time to sow their wild oats. What do people say when they say that? But they're going to sin anyway, and there's really nothing you can do about it. You just have to let them get it out of their system. Well, is that true? Is it possible for young people to resist what the devil's throwing at them? Do you remember what Solomon said? "To rejoice, but to be careful, because you're going to be judged." Rather than giving in to the impulse to sin, wouldn't it be better for parents to train their children to establish good habits rather than say, "Well, I hope they get out of this phase soon," and say that they're just kids or boys will be boys? 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word and conduct, in love and spirit and faith and purity." Paul told Timothy that he could be an example, that he was able to do what's right, that he could establish good habits. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 1 tells us to remember the Creator in the days of our youth, before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, "I have no pleasure in them." The Scriptures teach us that, yes, young people can be faithful. And we need to understand that. Young people, show yourselves as an example of good works, as Titus was told to teach. And show integrity in teaching. What does it mean to have integrity? It means that something is incorruptible, that it's uncorrupted doctrine or teaching. Youth is a time of idealism, and sometimes it's easy for people to get sidetracked into something that's false. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 14 indicates this. talking about the difference in those that are mature and those that are not, that we should no longer be children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine. So as mature Christians, we're not supposed to be tossed to and fro like what? Like children. In the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. So it's easy to get sidetracked into something false. You know, when 9/11 happened, you remember who the suicide bombers were? Young men. Why? Why is that important? Well, as we've said, that when people are younger, sometimes the reasoning and restraint parts of their brain are undeveloped or underdeveloped. And sometimes young men can be easily persuaded to do something that is reckless, that those that are older would say, "You've got to be kidding. I would not ever do that." You know, it's a joke sometimes. People say, well, famous last words of somebody were, you know, "Watch this." You know, where a child is about to do something crazy, or maybe an adult without a lot of brain. We have to use reason and we have to use restraint. And be careful about taking up ideas just because they're different. I believe that's a real danger today with many young people. They hear something that's different than what their parents said, that's different than what they've heard in their congregation, and they start thinking that their parents or their congregation is full of traditionalists and I'm going to think outside the box, and they get into areas that are more dangerous. And really, their minds are still developing. Paul tells Titus that you have to show integrity in teaching and also be reverent. What does it mean to be reverent? Well, it means to be dignified and to show honor to whom honor is due. And that's something that gets missed a whole lot today when it comes to the way that young people respect authority. A lot of people go into the exact opposite way in this regard. We need to encourage our young people, and we need to practice it ourselves. That we need to behave in such ways that will cause others to see that we're servants of God. Do we behave in such a way, young people, that others look at you and say, I'm impressed with the behavior of that young woman or that young man? Isn't it much better to be the hero and not the hoodlum, the one who others, young and old, can have respect for? We need to develop that ability. And also, Titus says, or Paul tells Titus, that the young people need to be incorruptible. What does it mean to be incorruptible? You know, that's a high order, be incorruptible. Romans chapter 2 and verse 7, eternal life to those who by patient continuance in doing good seek for glory, honor, and immortality. The word means something that cannot be destroyed. I think it's fitting that is here in this passage. To be incorruptible, something that is beyond corruption. There's a lot of wisdom here that's given to Titus to pass on to the young people. And a lot of wisdom that we've read tonight in the book of Ecclesiastes and Proverbs. To sum it up, we just need to not let Satan taint our lives with the corruption of sin. That's what it means to be incorruptible. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24. Do you not know that all who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. Those of you that are young people, you have started, many of you have started that race. Are you going to take a break from it? Are you going to keep going? Are you going to keep running? Paul said that he had to keep running and discipline his body and bring it into subjection. Lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. If Paul was concerned that he could become disqualified, and he is going to persevere, and he is going to discipline himself, then the same thing can happen to any of us. A lot of times people will start off on a project really well. How many of us have all kinds of projects that we started on that have fallen by the wayside? Things that we started, maybe they're all in the drafts folder on your computer where you started a brilliant email or some project and you never finished it. But that's going to happen on your job. That's going to happen in life, that we start on something and then maybe something that's more important came along and we had to put it aside and we didn't get back to it. But when it comes to our spiritual life, it's not something that we want to put aside. When we start on the life of a Christian, we start running that race, don't put it aside and say, well, I'm going to drop this for now and I'm going to come back and finish it later. That's exactly what Satan would like for us to do. When our lives are ahead of us, we are aimed for something great, aimed for something that has lasting value, and we don't need to be distracted from that. 2 Corinthians 5:9 says, therefore we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be well-pleasing to Him. That was Paul's aim, to be well-pleasing to God. And that's the same aim that we have, whether you're young or whether you're old. So I hope this lesson will be meaningful to you, and that those of you that have started this life as a Christian that are young will keep these things in mind. And it'll help strengthen you as different things are thrown in your way throughout your life. If we can help you in any way, if you're subject to the invitation, we would invite you to come while we stand together and sing.